attitude. We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
The independence case is a powerful one.
Another future is possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Simon Bilcliffe, the Yorkshire Party's candidate for the South Yorkshire mayoral election, which is due to be held next year. Welcome to the podcast, Simon.
Thank you very much. Look forward to having a chat with you today.
No, it's great to have you on to have a chat. So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to put yourself forward as the Yorkshire Party's candidate for the South Yorkshire mayoral election?
I've always had a great passion for Yorkshire, and it's been a challenging time for everyone in the country, but in particular in Yorkshire. And I think now is the time when we look at the post-COVID era, and there is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for South Yorkshire and Yorkshire generally to actually step forward and win the next industrial revolution that's coming around. And I think the devolution question is one that is needing to be asked but answered by having a devolved parliament in Yorkshire. And so the combination of the two things, a great opportunity for Yorkshire and also bringing political power, which will empower that, is a great, I suppose, time to stand forward for the election. So I'm delighted to do so.
Mm-hmm. And one of, obviously, the main things that you are concerned with as the Yorkshire Party's candidate is, as you mentioned there, devolution and increased powers for Yorkshire in general and obviously for South Yorkshire in particular, as it's where you're standing. What sort of increase in powers would you be thinking of looking specifically for South Yorkshire? Is there something that you would like to see in terms of the Mayor of South Yorkshire's remit that could be expanded? And if so, what sort of like expansion in powers would you like to see?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, devolution is an entirely Yorkshire agenda item. It's mm-hmm. not a South of Yorkshire agenda item because, you know, we've got 5.5 million people. We've got a wonderful place to live, and yet we've got no local political power of clout. Mm-hmm. So this is a stepping stone. The South Yorkshire mayor election, it's showing that the people of Yorkshire are wanting to step towards devolution, and also it is an ambassadorial role. It's there to bang the drum for South Yorkshire out in the wider UK and internationally about, you know, getting inward investment, looking at the opportunities that we can get by partnering with other parts of the country and the wider world to actually step forward as an area that people want to invest in. There's a lot of opportunity for South Yorkshire with the political impact that the Yorkshire Party can bring and the focus that we have on Yorkshire alone, rather than having a kind of all of the UK agenda. So, yeah, I think it's devolved power is a for all of Yorkshire rather than this particular bit. So I'm just looking forward to standing for the South Yorkshire election, mm-hmm. and hopefully giving a new fresh alternative to the voters to grasp the opportunity that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the reasons that your party leader, Bob Buxton, said that you would be a candidate that people could support is because when you make promises related to jobs, you actually have experience in business through your company, Webmart. For those listeners who aren't familiar with Webmart or what that might entail and how that might be related to you standing as Mayor of South Yorkshire, could you just explain what Webmart is and how it might link and give you experience for the role of Mayor of South Yorkshire?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Webmart is a integrated marketing services company based out of Barnsley in the north and Bicester and Oxfordshire in the south. It is 20 million turnover, and there are 34 people working there. The interesting thing about it is that I've called it in the past a Marxist capitalist business, but it's a lot less scary than it kind of sounds on first hearing. But basically, we use capitalism to create the profits and the value in the same way as any normal business does. But then we share out the profits, the surplus profits, to the people that make it, to the workers that in ensuring that we're a profitable business, and that has allowed people to have an exceptional quality of life because we align together. So the experience that I've got of running a business, which, you know, I started 25 years ago, this is no flash in the pan, and it's, you know, now a very strong business, never had to borrow money. So I've got a good startup track record. I've got a good longevity record of running a business, and actually having a business that works for people rather than works for the person at the top, which is, I think, very important. You know, capitalism is fantastic at creating wealth. And if in society, there's only really one way of creating wealth, and that is through business. And then the taxes that a business pays for the society that we want. So Webmart, we put all of the bonuses through the payroll, which means we pay the highest rate of tax that we are meant to pay, which allows the society to have the quality of services that we want to see and the type of society that we want to see. So the whole thing works in symbiosis. You know, the individual wins, the organization wins, and the society wins. So that ethos, if you like, of everybody winning at the same time, is distinctively different from many businesses that have not, you know, have taken active ways of trying to avoid tax. And we also have a 163-acre, what we call the Webmart Oxygen Farm, which has allowed us to rewild an area which, obviously, from an environmental point of view, allows great amenity, but also from a carbon perspective, we are carbon positive to the tune of 1,200 people, more than the carbon footprint of the business. So, you know, it works the environment as well as society, as well as the individuals who work in the business. And I think that ethos of everything aligning to deliver value to all of the key stakeholders is where this is a distinctively different alternative from the mainstream political parties.
Mm. And you mentioned the area that you have been rewilding. Yeah. What was it that got you interested in the concept of rewilding, and how did you start rewilding the land that you have been able to through Webmart?
Well, I mean, I've always been a keen environmentalist. I mean, I took agricultural economics when I was a sprog, and you know, understanding how, you know, the symbiosis between what, you know, how we treat the planet and how we treat people, and the, you know, you look at the economics of the world, and things like pollution don't get factored in. I mean, it's a very, you know, primitive kind of way of evaluating things is current modern economics, because it doesn't actually look at the things that make people's lives richer. It looks at the cost of things, but it ignores things like pollution, and it ignores things like treating people with respect. And that's one of the reasons that I was very keen to get the Webmart Oxygen Farm up and running, because it shows that a normal business such as Webmart can have a significant environmental positive impact rather than an extractive one where many businesses can have, because all we did was take cash that we had in the business and turned it from the balance sheet as an asset into something which will enhance the world by having a, you know, wonderful place for people to visit. And it allows me to offer to every member of Webmart a free week for them to spend time with their families in this, at this place. And so that enhances their work-life balance. It enhances their, you know, bonding with their families, et cetera, et cetera, at the same time. So again, it's looking for solutions which deliver value to everybody. And I think, you know, I've done it in the business I've done it in, from an environmental perspective, and now I want to do it in the political arena. And I think, you know, that, that if you like, those core values will hopefully chime with the voters of South Yorkshire.
Mm-hmm. And as mentioned throughout, one of the main issues for you is obviously employment in the region, yeah, and the economy. I mean, what are sort of things, if you were to become mayor of South Yorkshire, would you be doing to encourage businesses into the area and to give businesses that are already existing in the area greater support to expand and employ more people?
Yeah, good question. I mean, from a within the existing businesses, there's a huge amount of support already here, but it quite often it's fragmented, and it's only if you happen to know that it's there that you can benefit from it. So I think a much more joined up way of accessing that would be making sure that there is one place that you can actually ring up and get the advice that you want at a regional level, which would signpost you to the support service that they've got. And there are a lot out there, but a lot of people I speak to in business don't know that they're out there. And they're also one of the things that if you look at most successful businesses, say in America, mentoring and coaching of their leadership team is a prerequisite, you know, whereas over here we see it as almost a strange concept, having somebody to coach your leadership style. Mm. But generally, these things really do work. And so trying to get a strong mentoring and network going in Yorkshire. I mean, there are great organisations like Connect Yorkshire already that are supporting people, which I'm proud to be a part of, but at a wider level. In terms of the startup economy, there is, you know, some fantastic businesses springing out of the universities, but we need to do it at scale, and we need to keep the talent that goes to university here to start their businesses. So again, offering simple things like accounting software, which has all of the templates that you need to start a business already preloaded, making sure that you've got the support that is in the area already into that into that bit of software, so that you can click on a button and you have contracts of employment, for example, and things like making it really simple. We want South Yorkshire to be the easiest place in the world to grow your business, start your business, or invest from the outside of the area into here. And you know, I've been talking to people in Oxfordshire about having a twinning service with South Yorkshire, because there's a lot, it's very difficult to expand down south. Mm. You know, it's really expensive, there's not a lot of land and what have you. And if we can partner, you know, rather like, you know, you see on cities, they have twinning with certain places in a different part of the world, you know, to try and build links. If we can have economic twinning with different areas, so we can be a single point of contact for anybody who wanted to expand. Come here, partner with an existing Yorkshire business, partner with a local authority to find the space to expand your business here in South Yorkshire. It would be fantastic. And there's a lot of people I know, because obviously I know a lot of people down south who would, you know, once they come here, they really like it, and they can see there's a great opportunity. So this role is a ambassadorial role. It's a role that is bringing to the front of mind what a great place South Yorkshire is to live, to work, to invest. That's certainly what I would absolutely give 100% to if I was to get the vote on the 5th of May.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other issues that has been prevalent, not just in Yorkshire, but across the country, has obviously been COVID and its impact on hospitals and communities. I mean, what do you think the impact of COVID on South Yorkshire has been? And what would you see as your main mission if you were elected, in terms of combating some of the ill effects that will obviously be hanging around from COVID in May, and of course for, in some cases, many years to come?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a reset. And I think it's shown in many things. Some of them, you know, dreadful. Obviously, the inequality and that is in society, and this is where it's, you know, it should be a galvanizing force for us to realize there's got to be a better way going forward in terms of getting a more equitable society, because it's always the poorest that are hit hardest in times like this. And obviously going forward, it has made people reassess their life choices as well. People have, I think, had a great reset. I mean, they call it now, there's a huge amount of resignation going out. They call it the Great Resignation. People are looking at the different things that they want to do with their lives, and they, you know, it isn't business as usual. And I think that on the flip side is a great opportunity for South Yorkshire and wider Yorkshire. It's a great place to be. You can have, relative to many parts of the world, it is affordable housing. It is a great, got great countryside around. So it's a place that you can actually buy a house and actually afford to have a family, which is, not necessarily the case in many parts of the country. Mm. And also with the more flexible workplace that we find ourselves in, people are much more willing and able to allow people to work from home. So you can choose now where you want to be to do your job often, rather than be told. And that's liberating. And that is a great opportunity for places like, South Yorkshire to actually harvest these more flexible jobs, and give great amounts of well-being to, people, not just economic well-being, but, on a personal level, get a better work-life balance. But yes, COVID, we still don't know where we're going to be with this by May. And I think we've just got to be really very careful and keep as flexible as we can in terms of how we're going to respond to whatever it throws at us. But I think if we seize the opportunity, we've got great broadband now in many parts of South Yorkshire, and it's expanding all the time. I know in Barnsley, City Fibre are rolling it out quickly. Some parts of the county are better than others, but it is generally good enough to do a great, to be able to effectively work from home when that suits, and that gives you the flexibility to actually build a career which works with family life rather than necessarily have one playing against family life. So you never know. There may be some silver lining out of this rather dark cloud that COVID's been.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other issues that, of course, has affected a lot of areas in the north is poor public transportation. Now, what would you see as a way to improve public transportation in South Yorkshire? Would it simply be a case of going to the government and making a case for more money? Would it be involving businesses in some way? What would you see as a means of getting improved transportation in South Yorkshire?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge question and a huge issue. I mean, one of the challenges that you've got in, the UK is one of the most centralised governments in Europe. Mm. As a consequence of that, everything is very London-centric because the power and the people that decide these things are based out of London. As a consequence of that, we end up with the HS2 kind of debacle that we had, where effectively that decision it's easy for them to say when they never use the Woodhead Pass or State Pass, and they never have to sit on the drover's route between Sheffield and Manchester. But that has cost Yorkshire £30 billion in GDP. Well, if you look at Yorkshire, the GDP of Yorkshire is £163 billion. So that's, give or take, 20% almost of our GDP that they're taking off as a future economic well-being, because the infrastructure isn't there that we need. Now, there's no shortage of people and reports saying what we need. There's a shortage of political will to make it happen. And this is where, as South Yorkshire Mayor, I would absolutely be haranguing those currently in power to actually understand the economics of it from their point of view as well. You know, for us, it matters because we live it. But if you're looking at it from a UK economy point of view, that's a huge amount of money that the Treasury could get in if we were to be given that investment. So I think you've got to look at both hearts and minds. You know, there's a logic and a magic to getting funding out of central government. And I think by looking at it rationally, but also passionately, and that's certainly what I could do, we've got a much better chance of getting the transport systems and infrastructure that we know we need. I mean, there are many strategy papers on what we need. It's just getting the desire, creating the desire in the corridors of power to actually give us the tools to do the job that we want to do. Obviously, the bigger picture is devolution. If we devolved the decision-making to a Yorkshire Assembly in whatever shape or form, of course you wouldn't be having those decisions, you know, being deferred, because we know, we understand how important it is to get these things done. So that's where political power and the infrastructure are inextricably linked. You know, yes, we can make the case with passion, with verve, and with determination, and that will get us towards it. But devolution is by far the most effective way of getting the infrastructure and the if you like, the gravitas within Yorkshire that it deserves.
And of course, one of the other issues that has had an effect, not quite as much as COVID, but certainly has had an effect on the whole UK, has been the economic result of Brexit. Certain areas have seen a lack of transportation of goods because of a shortage of HGV drivers, etc. I mean, what sort of impact do you think that Brexit has had on South Yorkshire? And do you think it has been more negative or more positive? What do you think as an effect it has had?
Yeah, I mean, Brexit is a fact that we are all coming to terms with, I think. I don't think we've seen how it's going to play out in the fullness of time yet. It's very early days in terms of seeing the impact of it. I mean, I am a naturally positive person. So you look at the fact that all of a sudden there is a desire for people to be trained. You know, I think that's what we see education and lifelong education as being a key part of our post-COVID, post-Brexit world that we live in, that you don't leave school or university and that's your education done. It is part of a continuum all the way through your life to retirement and probably beyond, that you are constantly learning new skills and learning new ways of creating value for yourself, either intellectually or emotionally or financially or all three. And this is where I think if you look at Brexit per se, we used to have, you know, effectively a right for Europeans to come and work here. That isn't going to be the case anymore. So, you know, people are reassessing, business leaders are reassessing how they're going to develop their talent. And I've seen a lot of opportunities coming around now for people who want to progress to be able to get more training. But there's a lot more to be done. So the skills gap that we've got will have to be filled with people who are not necessarily having the skills at the moment, but having the opportunity to upskill themselves. And by upskilling, you give yourself a much better life chance, because hopefully you'll get a more rewarding role, and you'll get both in terms of the way that the joy you get out of it, and also the money you get for doing it. So lifelong learning is a big issue and a big opportunity. At the moment, it's not well structured. It's not clear how you can get that. And I think that's a piece of a very important key piece of work that needs to be done rather quickly. And that was something that I certainly will be leading on. And I've been speaking to, you know, educational leaders about how we could get the provision. And that some of this will be, you know, I was talking to Dave Richards the other day of One Disco in Sheffield, who set up the A-Up program, which is for upskilling people into digital jobs, and there's 1 million unfilled digital jobs right here, right now in the UK. I mean, there's huge, huge opportunities. I'm also on chairing two prisoner, you know, ex-offender employability groups, and all of a sudden there's, you know, we're really getting some traction in getting people out of the criminal system into gainful employment. And the best guess is one person that doesn't go back into the criminal system saves society £2 million. I mean, this is huge, huge thing. So, you know, in that sense, having a shortage of labour coming in is a very positive thing, because it gives people a second chance for coming out of prison, but it also gives people, you know, multiple more opportunities to upskill themselves for their career. Mm. So yeah, it is a change. It is a massive change, and some companies, you know, are finding it much more difficult than others to adapt to that change. But I think it will be here for the foreseeable future, and I think South Yorkshire is in a great place if we get this lifelong learning provision in place, and we get, you know, public and private sector to work together to really capture this next green artificial intelligence enabled tech industrial revolution that we're going through now. It's a really exciting time.
So in terms of another issue that has obviously impacted people, though not on the same scale as Brexit or coronavirus, Storm Arwen obviously created a great deal of disruption in the north of England. There are still houses in Scotland and in parts of the further north of Yorkshire, parts of the north of England that still don't have any power. I mean, what do you think that says about energy reliance, and also the way that energy companies treat certain parts of the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's shown that the devolved, privatised grid system isn't quite as robust as we're expecting. And you know, bear in mind, we're all being urged to electrify everything. You know, I've got an electric car, and that's, you know, fabulous when I've got electricity. It's marginally less than hapless if I was, you know, 10 days without power. It wouldn't be that grand. And, you know, the Northern Power Grid, if I'm not mistaken, is owned by Hathaway Berkshire, the kind of Warren Buffett company. So, it's got no shortage of money, but it's got a shortage of being able to support people who need it most. And I think we need to look at the resilience within the infrastructure that we've got, because these events will be more frequent. I mean, if you've been up to the parts of the country that have been affected by that, and I haven't, but I have got people that I know in the at the Webmart Oxygen Farm, which has been, you know, kind of devastated by the storm. I mean, it had 104 mile an hour winds going through there. This was a hurricane. You know, we call it a storm, but when you get winds like that, and it's just snapped 40-year-old trees in half, there's not a lot you can do to prevent those things happening, but you can actually respond more effectively. And I think it's taken far too long for the army to be brought in. And I do think they'll look back over time and say, actually, they could have predicted quite a lot of this. So I think contingency planning for these exceptional events needs to be made much more robust, and have contingency plans in place to get things like generators to people, you know, because you can't, you know, if it is total devastation, as it is in some of those places, it's going to be a long job to get it back. But what you can do is mitigate by getting temporary measures ready and waiting for these things to happen. So, you know, I think it'll be a salutary lesson, and I do feel so much for, you can only imagine with what it's like to be 10 days without any heating or any, you know, in some cases water. But I think hopefully there needs to be a more robust and more future-proofed approach to these kind of disasters than we've seen certainly with Storm Arwen.
Absolutely. Well, it's been fantastic to speak to you, Simon. I have one final question. We're obviously coming up to Christmas, the Christmas season, and obviously because of the Omicron variant, people perhaps won't be travelling as far this Christmas as they might have been planning to. But in normal times, if someone was coming up to Yorkshire for Christmas and they could only visit one part of South Yorkshire, which part of South Yorkshire would you tell them to visit?
That's a very difficult question to answer. Goodness me. Well, I mean, I think to me, a lovely part of the world that is, I suppose, COVID secure and beautiful is the Yorkshire Sculpture Park. Mm. Half of which was in South Yorkshire, half of which is in West Yorkshire. So it's on the border, but it is beautiful, 500 acres. So you're ever so secure because you're all outside. Beautiful scenery, and it's a great place to walk with all of your family when you get together at Christmas.
Mm, absolutely, a wonderful place to visit. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Simon. If people want to find out more about you and about your campaign, where should they go to find out more about you and about your campaign?
Well, thank you very much indeed. Certainly the yorkshireparty.org website, and on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, it's Bilty, B-I-L-T-Y, for the number 4 mayor. And I'm there, and anybody wants to reach out, support, help, you know, I'm very open to any offers of support. I'll be most, most grateful.
Fantastic. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Debated Podcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.